podcast is not for the weak-minded. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer. Watch the live stream
right now
at Infowars.com/show.
And he said, Bill Clinton is a rapist! Bill Clinton raped Juanita Broderick!
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Wow, that guy sounded pretty angry that Bill Clinton was coming to his town to spread a bunch of propaganda and lies and wanted to speak out about it. Welcome, everyone, to the War Room. I'm your host, Rob Dew. Thank you for joining me. We'll be here from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Central, as we are every weekday, part of our 10 hours of live broadcast that we do here out of the Central Texas Command Center. This is the third installment of the day, the War Room, and thank you for joining me. So yesterday, normally our day off here, but of course, InfoWarriors never stop. We decided to, since Bill Clinton was going to come grace us with his presence at Austin, Texas, for a book signing. I think people were paying $300 to have their book signed at the Bass Concert Hall in the University of Texas, UT. Well, some interesting things happened. One, there was a nice gathering of people outside, patriots, wanting to protest. There were so few people there that they had to take the upper level of the orchestra and move people down. That's what we were finding out from people who were inside. And then five people confronted Bill Clinton during his speech. And they brought up numerous things. They brought up MENA, Arkansas, his treatment of women, including rape, going on the pedophile, the Lolita Express with Jerry Epstein, convicted pedophile, his son, Danny Williams. And it's and it goes on and on. Five different people confronted Bill Clinton. We had two of them on today on the show, earlier on the Alex Jones show earlier today. And we're going to play that report of all five confrontations. But first, I want to play you a clip of this. This is Bill Clinton from an interview he did with PBS NewsHour. And so they're calling him tone deaf. Seems to be in the era of Me Too. So Bill Clinton's new interview on the PBS NewsHour, which aired last week, featured some shocking and strikingly tone deaf comments from the former president about sexual harassment, including his opinion on what you can do to someone else against their will has changed. So let's play this clip and then see if we can figure out what the heck he's talking about.
I think that what happened with you was more serious than what happened with former Senator Al Franken. He was driven from office from the U.S. Senate. So norms have changed. Do you think that's a good thing?
Well, in general, I think it's a good thing, yes. I think it's a good thing that we should all have higher standards. I think the norms have really changed in terms of what you can do to somebody against their will, how much you can crowd their space, make them miserable at work. You don't have to physically assault somebody to make them, uncomfortable at work or in at home or in their utter just walking around.
Well, he fell off that tightrope. I think there's different things you could. I mean, all the things he did, taking a intern and having oral sex with her inside the Oval Office, raping Juanita Broderick, that's what she says, happened to her in a hotel room when he was governor. Kathleen Willey, who was a newscaster, she was groped and fondled. Paula Jones was sexually harassed. And I'm sure there's plenty of others that are either dead or just don't want to go through the grief of being called pariahs by the mainstream media because they protected Bill Clinton. It was okay when he did it. Anybody who brought up information about him, they were bad. So when we come back, we're going to play those five confrontations against Bill Clinton yesterday because, you know, even though Austin's a liberal bastion, he still couldn't get enough insane people to show up at his event. They had to make it smaller, and we had five people speak out against him. So we'll have that video here, exclusive to InfoWars, right after this.
We'll be right back.
Juanita Broderick.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Well, that never gets old, does it? Hearing Bill Clinton getting called out by a patriot in the audience at his book signing. He was charging $300 just to get his book signed. So you can watch the video we're about to play. You can spread that link by going to InfoWars.com and looking for the article. Bill Clinton confronted five times at Austin speaking event. Me Too protests, a reoccurring theme at Clinton book events. So you can check that out. And we're going to play that in 1 second, but I want to go check out this article first. Poll, Bill Clinton, a sexual predator, most voters say. Over half the respondents, 53% of a Rasmussen poll, describe Clinton as a sexual predator, with only 24% claiming he's a victim of political opponents and another 24% are undecided. Interestingly, men, 55%, are more likely to consider Clinton a predator than women, are 50%, according to Rasmussen. So you can read that's Kit Daniels' article. Bill Clinton, a sexual predator, most voters say. Public opinion is turning against the ex-president. And if you look at the crowd we had out yesterday for our Me Too protest outside the event, and then combine that with the five people inside talking about Bill Clinton, not of just his sexual predatorness, but of a litany of other crimes that he was able to skate free from. So let's go to that report now. Here it is.
And he said,
Bill Clinton is a rapist! Bill Clinton raped Juanita Broderick!
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Don't touch me, sir. Don't push me.
Close.
Who is Barry Seal? see you, Bill Clinton. Gun runner and drug trafficker Barry Seal. Bill Clinton facilitated drug running in Tamina, Arkansas, where he was governor there.
What's that, man?
What about the reconciliation of Danny Williams, your illegitimate son? Don't forget him! Danny Williams! Hey! Next Sunday's Father's Day! What about Father's Day? Look at you! 1985, your son was born! And you know that! And you know that, Bill! What about Danny Williams? What about Danny Williams? Justice for Danny Williams! Look it up! Justice for Danny Williams! Look it up! Look it up! He's a little darker than Bill!
I wonder if you could just... Can you just give me a minute to talk to the former president of the United States of America about North Korea?
Why did you want me to do this? And he said,
Bill Clinton is a rapist! Bill Clinton raped Juanita Broderick in the motel room!
Out of here.
And when he was running for governor of Arkansas, you need to look it up. He doesn't care about women. Bill Clinton is a rapist!
That one of the favorite things is to attack you over something that happened so long ago, nobody knows whether it's true or not.
Come on, man.
Got that truth.
What's up with you, man?
I got the truth.
You have, I think, pretty plausible way that the president has to be absent from his
first of all, it is physically possible to do.
Yeah, because of Lolita Express.
And we described
that's why. Talk about Weinstein, how you're related to Weinstein. We know it. We know it. Jeffrey Epstein.
Once you get your information, we'll send you out. So you're not allowed to come back to this venue.
Okay.
Okay. Understood. Please keep in mind, we could file charges for disrupting a public event.
Thank you.
But I think we're going to look just a trespass warning. So you have to come back for this event. If you get tickets for a show tomorrow night, come back to that. Cool?
That sounds very cool.
Former President Bill Clinton was in Austin tonight, but not everyone was excited about it. He stopped by the Bass Concert Hall for a book tour. He authored The President is Missing with best-selling author James Patterson. This is the former president's first work of fiction. During the event, five people were escorted out by University of Texas police, all for separate outbursts. And standing outside the Bass Concert Hall, several protesters coming out against Clinton. They were holding signs saying, Me Too.
So there it is. Those are the five patriots that it had, a plus the dozens of people outside who were sick and tired of Bill Clinton just walking around like he doesn't need to be called out. He totally needs to be called out. We got a poll. Over 50% of the people polled think he's a sexual predator. So we're changing the tide here. It takes a while, but we're changing it. It's happening with your help out there. Thank you very much. And we'll be right back after this short break. And we're going to get into the North Korean Peace Summit. Can it happen? Can Trump bring peace to North Korea? Unlike any of his other predecessors. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the War Room. I'm your host, Rob Due. Thank you for joining us here on this Monday, June 11th, one day before the peace summit in Singapore between North Korea and the United States. Also, South Korea will be there. I believe Chinese leaders will be there, and also from leaders from Japan. So it'll be interesting to see what comes from this. This could be a new era, a dawn of a new era for the people in North Korea. And of course, there's detractors, and I'm going to get into that. But yesterday, just finishing up, get my last word on that, Bill Clinton came to town, and we set up a Me Too protest because Bill Clinton is literally the progenitor of the Me Too movement. It all started with him. And we had, so we did 4 to 6, the regular Alex Jones show on Sunday, and then we went 6 to 8. We also had a crew out at, so we were doing live here in this studio. I was actually live here yesterday from 6 to 8. We had a crew there. And then we had people staying up hours of the night editing all this stuff together, all this footage that people were giving us after they confronted Bill Clinton. So that's about 15 people coming into work, 15, 16 people coming into work, working later hours on a Sunday. And the reason we're able to do that is because people come out and support us. That's the only way we're able to do it, is to get the camera crews set up, get the people, and hire the extra people so everybody's not brain dead by the end of the day and not able to start the week off right. And we're able to do that by people going to InfoWarsStore.com and checking out some of the incredible sales we have. Like right now, free shipping as part of our Super Summer Sale, but it's going to end soon. I don't think it's going to last much longer. But we have 50% off Super Male Vitality, Brain Force Plus, Silver Bullet, Alpha Power, Survival Shield X2, and more. Icarin, 40% off. DNA Force, 50% off. All the Super Blue products are toothpaste, the mouthwash, 50% off. You brush your teeth? I hope so. I hope you do it twice a day. Just get some of our toothpaste. It's great. Doesn't have fluoride in it. Doesn't have... Literally, fluoride is a hazardous toxic waste that they put in our water and in our toothpaste, and they tell us it's for our teeth, but it's an industrial byproduct. It's waste. If the only reason they put it in there is so they don't have to pay to dispose of it, so they use you as a disposal. So stop using yourself as a hazardous waste disposal and get some of our products. Super Blue, complete combo pack with, I guess it looks like two forms of toothpaste, all three versions of the spray, the immune gargle, and then the mouthwash. We have a great price on that combo pack. And then we hope you repeat as you run out of toothpaste, you run out of mouthwash, become a repeat customer. And it supports everything we're doing here. Like on Thursday, when we go to our latest 34-hour broadcast, looking after that IG report that's going to be released Thursday. So we're going to have a 34-hour broadcast just dedicated to this IG report. If you guys could pull up the graphic, please. It's going to start 8 a.m. on Thursday. And it's the fall of the deep state, the release of the IG report. This is what everybody's been talking about. We've gotten some glimpses that, of course, don't want to portray anyone into a bad light. And I'm going to get into the article later of how they're going to spin this IG report, the Democrats, when they get into it. But as we finish up, and I might take this into our next interview with Dan Lyman, who is on location at Bilderberg. But what's going on with this summit? Well, Daily Mail, of course, reports U.S. won't bring up North Korea's human rights issues at Singapore summit. How do they know? It hasn't happened yet. But of course they know. And so they quote this, the start of their article, some North Korean guy who escaped to China in 1998 and is now a citizen. He said he should not make deal with terrorists. This regime will never give up its nuclear development. So that's what he's saying. And but Trump has made it clear that he's willing to offer security guarantees and financial aid to Kim Jong-un if he gives up his nuclear arsenal. And already they've blown up one of their processing plants. They showed video of that. Of course, we have to have inspectors in there. We have to see what's going on. But here's the interesting, there's Camp 16, which here's an image. It's a concentration camp. Now, this one's known as Camp 3. But it's estimated there's 100,000 political prisoners tied up in these camps, some of which there's children put into these just because their grandfathers were caught doing something. So they put the whole family in. And of course, this is wrong. And Trump knows about this. In fact, he's even mentioned it. Let me go to his quotes, which are right over here. He says all responsible nations must join forces to isolate the brutal North Korean regime, to deny it in any form, in any form of it. You cannot support, you cannot supply, you cannot accept. But now he's saying Trump is speaking a different tune, because there's only two options. You either go to war with them or you make peace with them. I notice we're not doing too much about the human relations and the human rights violations going on in China right now. But we're trading with them. And we're hoping that by trading with them, we can get them to change their ways. So an estimated 100,000 people suffer in North Korean gulags, toiling in forced labor and enduring torture, starvation, rape, murder on a constant basis, Trump said in his speech. In one known instance, a 9-year-old boy was in prison for 10 years because his grandfather was accused of treason. And another student was beaten in school for forgetting a single detail about the life of Kim Jong-un. So obviously Trump is aware of this stuff. But Daily Mail wants to kind of throw shade at the president. Same with AP. Excitement high, expectations lower on Trump-Kim summit eve. So the eyes of the world are upon them, to quote the Grateful Dead. Yet even before they meet, Trump announced plans to leave early, raising questions about whether his aspirations for an ambitious outcome have been scaled back. Trump and Kim are going to meet one-on-one for at least an hour, joined by translators. Then the aides were to come in for more discussions and a working lunch. Mike Pompeo said, "We're hopeful that this summit will have set the conditions for future successful talks," describing a far more modest goal than Trump had outlined days earlier. And I guess today Trump sat down with Moon Jae-lee, who is the president of South Korea, for a working lunch. Because in order for this to work, South Korea is going to have to work with North Korea. They've already had a couple meetings. Kim has crossed the demilitarized zone into South Korea. These are all good signs. But here's an interesting little tidbit. Kim Jong-un brings private toilet to summit with Trump. This is a Mikhail Thalen article. The chosen Ibu's toilet was delivered on an IL-76 transport plane along with Kim's bulletproof limousine and other essentials. States the toilet will be used only, and they say this to deny determined sewer divers insights into the supreme leader's stools, which could provide clues on Kim's health. They're literally worried about people grooming his stool. So Amir Atmadin said in 2016, Soviet agent Igor Amatakos said that while doing research in the archives, they found evidence that the secret police under Joseph Stalin analyzed the excrement of foreign leaders, including Mao Zedong, as part of a construct of psychological portraits. Toilet diving. All right, we'll be right back after this. Joining us, straight from Bilderberg, Dan Lyman, coming up. Infowars.com/show is the free stream to send out to everybody you know.
Infowars.com/show.
Decoding enemy transmissions
so you get the truth.
This is the War Room with Owen Schroyer.
Welcome back to the War Room at Infowars.com/show. That's the free stream to send out to everybody. All this is, of course, made possible by you out there, the listener who goes to Infowarsstore.com and checks out some of our amazing deals that we're having right now, especially free shipping and 50% off a ton of items. So check that out, Infowarsstore.com. Now, we were talking last segment about what's going to happen at this North Korean summit, and I've got two guests coming up, Dan Lyman and Josh Friedman, who were both there in Turin, Italy. I think they had a Winter Olympics there not too long ago, maybe about 10 years ago. And so I want to get their insights on what's happening in Bilderberg. But I also want to get into the detractors here in the United States who just want war with North Korea. They don't want to see peace. They want to see war. It makes me wonder where their stock portfolios lie. So let's bring them on. Dan Lyman, our foreign correspondent at Europe.Infowars.com, and Josh Freeman of FreemanPost.com. How are you doing today, gentlemen?
Doing well. Good to be with you,
pretty well.
Excellent. So I was talking about the summit, which there's a lot going on this weekend. There was the G7. We had Bilderberg. NATO was also having a summit. Putin was on TV having a question Q&A. And then flows right into this North Korean summit. So there's a lot of stuff going on. We'll try to get through it the rest of the hour here. But I want to play these three clips of the detractors. And it starts with Lindsey Graham, who wants to have war. And then it goes into Rudy Giuliani, who's trying to say, oh, he's begging on his hands and knees. And then John Bolton saying, you know, we're going to have the Libyan solution for North Korea, which means, you know, infiltrating terrorist groups and taking over your country. So let's go through those clips, and then I'll give each of you a shot. And I want to get your thoughts on the summit, if it'll be successful, and then your thoughts on these war hawks. Go ahead.
I think he's very much ready. I think what he's going to convey to North Korea is he wants a peaceful resolution to the nuclear threat as well as to end the Korean War. But the goal is to eliminate their nuclear missile program, not contain it, do it in a win-win fashion. There's three outcomes here. Peace, where we have a win-win solution. Military force, where we devastate the North Korean regime and stop their program by force, or to capitulate like we've done in the past, and Donald Trump is not going to capitulate. So there's really only two options, peace or war.
President Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, says that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un begged the White House for a summit.
North Korea, after he canceled the summit because they insulted the vice president, they insulted his national security advisor, and they also said they were going to go to nuclear war against us. They were going to defeat us in a nuclear war. We said, well, we're not going to have a summit under those circumstances. Well, Kim Jong-un got back on his hands and knees and begged for it.
Well, the summit with Kim Jong-un was originally canceled by the White House 2 years ago, but it's now back on after the North Koreans agreed to the Trump administration's terms. They'll meet at the Capella Hotel in Singapore. We will be.
That's why we're here now, and I think it's up to the North Koreans to show us that they really do intend to give up nuclear weapons.
Well, arguably, North Korea also walks in a position of some strength, economic weakness perhaps, but this nuclear program is further along than any past administration has encountered.
Because of the mistakes of 25 years of past administrations.
Is it a requirement that Kim Jong-un agree to give away those weapons before you give any kind of concession?
I think that's right. I think we're looking at the Libya model of 2003, 2004. We're also looking at what North Korea itself has committed to previously. And most importantly, I think going back over a quarter of a century to the 1992 joint North-South denuclearization agreement, where North Korea committed to give up nuclear weapons and committed to give up uranium enrichment and plutonium reprocessing.
All right, let's go to our guests. We got Dan Lyman of Europe.Infowars.com. You can follow him at Citizen Analyst, and Josh Friedman at Freeman Post, or at Freeman Reporter, and he posts stuff at FreemanPost.com. We have to also have an alternative to the internet ghetto. So, Josh, I'm going to give you the first crack at this. What do you think? Do you think these guys are calling for war? Do you think they want war, the Warhawks? And what do you think is going to happen with this summit?
Well, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if John Bolton wants war. With Trump, I'm not so sure about that. I would lean toward guessing not, but he is quite unpredictable. I have to say that, frankly, as all these major geopolitical events have been taking place with Bilderberg, G7, the summit upcoming, Putin, as you mentioned, and NATO simultaneously, I have not been really focused on the North Korean summit. I've really been just focused first and foremost on Bilderberg and secondarily on G7 and NATO and Putin. They relate a little more to Bilderberg than the North Korean summit.
Right. And let's be clear, I don't even think people know this. You had Italian police barge into your room at 4 a.m. and point guns at you, thinking you were a terrorist.
That is true, and I think we'll be getting to that. But regarding the summit, I'll make one point. It seems as though Trump has momentum building unlike any president or administration in recent memory. So maybe he turns that into something. And also, Bolton could prove as, in a sense, his Trump card. I mean, maybe because North Korea knows that threat is there, particularly with Bolton in the background, maybe that gets North Korea to capitulate. But I really don't know. I can't tell you what's going to happen.
All right. Well, that's an interesting take. Go ahead, Dan.
I thought that was a great last point there, that Bolton kind of makes things unpredictable. But I have to think that all these war hawks and chicken hawks as well, like Bolton, I can't imagine that they truly want peace on the peninsula, because if that's the case, then the 20,000 plus troops we have there and all the tanks and heavy artillery wouldn't be as needed, if needed at all. And that's big business. So they have to play their cards in favor of the military-industrial complex in that way. But then I think they would also look foolish, at least not supporting peace as an option. So I think they had to play both sides of that coin. My perfect scenario is all those guys, we bring them home, we put them on our border instead of that border.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't necessarily need a demilitarized zone. We just need a place to, when people try to come across, to hold them till they're processed and then ship them back over. All right, well, let's get into Bilderberg, guys. I kind of wanted to put a book in on that. You guys were there. Dan, this was your first Bilderberg. It's always interesting, especially with the language barrier. I've been there in Germany and Austria, and dealing with the police. I've had police get in my face, come into my room, follow us up a mountain 3 miles from where the event's taking place and harass us. It doesn't stop. How was the police presence this year? And I know you guys each had a different detaining. So why don't y'all go ahead, Josh, I'll give you the first crack at it again. Tell people your story and how many times you were detained by the police.
I actually wasn't detained so many times. I had this one incredibly dramatic story that happened right before the conference got underway. I was detained a couple times, and maybe we'll get into that later. But so what happened was, it was early Thursday morning. It was a little before 4 a.m. European time, hours before the conference got started. And I'm lying in bed in my room in a studio apartment in Turin, not too far away from the venue. And out of nowhere, there's all this noise coming up the stairwell. And I'm thinking at first, maybe it's a late check-in. Then I'm thinking maybe there's some drunks here. Then the noise gets louder and louder and louder, to the point where there's just a boom and my door goes flying open. Five or so, give or take, five police officers come bursting into my one-room apartment there in Turin. And at least one of them was pointing a gun at me as I'm lying in bed. It was all happening so fast, and there was so much commotion. I don't remember every single detail, but there was at least one gun pointed at me as I was lying in bed. And they start shouting things, and then I realize that they're demanding that I tell them my name, and I'm saying, what's going on here? Why is this happening? What's going on? Eventually, I tell them my name. They demand my passport or document. They see that I've got a U.S. passport.
All right, I'm going to stop you right there. We're about to go to break, Josh. When we come back, I'll let you finish that story. And then we have an interview that we put up talking about what happened afterwards, which is even more interesting, I think, that there was a case of mistaken identity. So we'll be right back. Dan Lyman, Josh Friedman.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
Yeah, this would make a great music video playing this song with my two guests who are actually chasing a Bilderberger down the streets of Turin, Italy. Because that's what we have to go through, because they don't hold press conferences. They don't release anything. You know, the editor of Bloomberg's there. The editor of The Economist is there. And so the only time we can get these guys is when they go out for a jog. Well, here they are. That's Dan Lyman on camera, who's shooting he's shooting the video you're watching right now. And then we have Tillman, who has been with me at two different Bilderbergers. Loves to confront these guys. And then Josh Friedman also jogging along, dodging people in the streets. See the lady get out of the way? She's like, what's going on? I mean, that's the lengths we have to go to. And they don't even want to talk. They don't want to talk about what they're talking about. And one of the interesting guests who I think it was her first Bilderberg, she runs the director of autonomous studies, which is AI, basically, at the Royal Institute of technology in Sweden. That was Danica Krajic. One, you know, I guess one of the newer Bilderbergers they brought in. But let's go back to Thursday, right before Bilderberg. Josh Freeman, guns pointed at him in his room. So, Josh, finish up your story. We also have Dan Lyman. We're going to get his take. He was also detained by police. It happens a lot. It's part of earning your stripes at Bilderberg, earning your Bilderbergers. But, Josh, go ahead and finish your story about the police busting into your room, and then talk about the phone call or the text you got from your landlord afterwards.
So basically the police started saying it was a mistake. We were looking for someone else. And then they came back and told me that they caught this suspect at a nearby location. And then later in the day, actually, I knew they had spoken with my landlord, because when they came back to my apartment about 30 minutes after the first time, when they came in with the guns, they brought my landlord. And when I spoke with him or got a text from him later in the day, what he told me was that the police were looking for a terrorist, and they found the terrorist at some nearby home. And that became more interesting as the week went on, because the Italian police were very much policing the journalists outside Bilderberg using terrorism statutes. The word terrorism came up over and over and over again, not just with me, particularly with other journalists like Luke Radowski and Dan Dix. Frequently, journalists were being told things like they could be committing acts of terrorism, their phone could be used to detonate something, or merely that their actions can be policed under some terrorism laws. So the word terrorism was repeatedly used in the interactions between police and journalists.
Yeah, that's amazing that they would. And, you know, that's kind of what they do here sometimes. They say, oh, well, you know, this is a national security, so we can't talk about this. You can't show this. It happens more and more again. It's all about keeping secrecy while they're in there talking about, you know, autonomous robots that are going to take over the world eventually, and AI and whatnot. Dan Lyman, tell us about your experiences there with the police.
Well, I managed to escape any detentions until the final day we were posted up at the airport. And we had kind of had the flight schedule down, and we kind of had an idea when the Bilderbergers were going to start coming in to the main airport there in Turin. And we did have a pretty good run at the beginning, where we were able to basically approach them as they would exit the vehicle and then follow them into the airport. And of course, they weren't too happy about that. But eventually, there was a military jeep that pulled up out front, and there were very heavily armed military personnel as well as military police and local police as well. And they started patrolling the front of the airport, and they started accosting us one by one, pulling us aside. They'd kind of just surround us and then grab our passport and take our information down and then decide whether or not it was okay if we stayed. Eventually, they did let us all stay, but they said that if we entered the airport to conduct any more reporting, then we would face arrest at that point. So we just managed to hang out on the sidewalk out there, and they kept a watchful eye, and they did increase the security presence as the day went on. Eventually, there would be like large hordes of security guards who would stand all around a Bilderberger as he was retrieving his bags or she from the vehicle and try to keep us from even getting a good video shot. So it was an interesting escalation at the airport.
And, you know, I remember in Dresden, Germany, Peter Thiel actually came out and gave a quick press conference. He at least talked to the press. He said, hey, I want to give a statement, but then, you know, we want you guys to leave us alone. And of course, I don't think anybody left him alone. I think it just increased, and maybe that's why they didn't do anything like that this year. But I want to play that clip. Go back to that clip, because one of the guys you ran into was Larry Summers, who was literally the architect of the financial collapse in 2008. He worked in the Clinton administration, and he got the Glass-Steagall Act repealed. That was one of his main tenets of working there, one of his crowning achievements, which then 10 years later led to the financial crisis, because it got rid of the regulations and allowed people to be lent all types of money, even when they weren't, when they shouldn't be lent to, and created that giant bubble. So let's play that clip, because you asked him a very interesting question. Go ahead, guys.
What is the Mr. Summers? Hello, conference. I'm just curious, what is the intersection between
I have no comment
between Bilderberg and finance?
Sir, are there any plans to provoke a war with NATO and Russia? Is that what you're discussing in the meeting?
So, Dan, repeat your question in case people couldn't hear that. You know, it was a loud airport and we're shooting on iPhones. Go ahead. What was your question to Larry Summers?
Yeah, I asked him if there was any discussion in the meeting to provoke a war with Russia via NATO. You had the head of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, was actually in the meeting. And, of course, there was a NATO meeting going on simultaneously elsewhere. And but he had no comment on that. I did ask that of a couple other Bilderbergers, but no one wanted to answer that question, of course. And I just asked them repeatedly, what was on the Russia docket? Because, you know, with the whole Russia hysteria right now, and they had so many different people represented at this meeting, and some people in intelligence, and we had someone from the Department of Defense, James H. Baker, who we also confronted as well. You just have to wonder what's going on in there, because there, you know, the Russia hysteria has not abated at all. So, but none of them would answer really any questions at all, and certainly not that one.
And Russia was on the agenda. So was Iran. So was AI. I'm not sure if cryptocurrencies were per se, but the populism, the rise of populism in Europe, they were definitely covering a lot of ground. And looking more into this Danica Krajic individual, she seems to be the forefront of working on AI systems and development and implementing robots into the real world. So it's going to be pretty interesting at you know, what comes out of this Bilderberg, what new trends are started, because Bilderberg isn't really a place where they react to trends. It's where they actually germinate new trends and, you know, give birth to them and then throw them out into the world.
Yeah, definitely. We were able to we corralled her. She definitely wasn't expecting it. I don't think we were either, because we were in an area like where there was like a nice Italian market, and it was off to the side. It wasn't really near the complex per se, the hotel itself. And we all were over there just kind of meeting up with different folks and maybe grabbing a bite. And then all of a sudden we saw the pass. It was like a white pass. You could tell where the Bilderbergers, that's how they set themselves apart. And we managed to accost her, and I think she was planning on going shopping. And once we surrounded her and started peppering her with questions, she turned around and headed straight back for the entrance to the building to get away from us. But we had her for a good 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, and it's even when they don't say anything, like when you ask Larry Summers about war with Russia, he kind of smirks and as he walks off. These people are so pompous. And talk about, well, one, there's like migrant camps right nearby where they're having the Bilderberg meeting. It's like Bilderberg of migrants this year. You reported it in this article. Bilderberg globalists meet minutes from no-go migrant village. That's europe.infowars.com. And is anything else you guys want to add in the last minute or so? And I'll keep you over to the next 5-minute segment. But go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, it was actually, I arrived by train, and I arrived kind of at night and was walking to my hotel, which technically should have been a 10-minute walk to the event, to the NH Lingotto. Ended up being an hour the next day because they closed off that walkway. It was interesting. But yeah, I was walking through and I couldn't believe just the area that I was in, the amount of migrants. They were like all over the place, hanging out in parks, just kind of giving me the eye. And then I found out the next day that was actually the Olympic athletes village for the Turin Olympics in 2006. Eventually it went abandoned, and now it's occupied by over 1,000 mostly African migrants there. And it's known as the beginnings of a no-go zone. The police can't really police in there, and they don't really try either. So there have been girls that have been raped on their way by, apparently, and the police can't really do much about it because they can't locate perpetrators inside.
Yeah, it's all part of the dehumanization plan of Europe, which people are finally waking up to. But is it too late? Here we have video of a migrant washing his butt at a fountain. Watch this. He takes a drink, and then he's gonna, well, we'll get to that. I'll show you that when we come back.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
Donald J. Trump is president of the United States.
Trigger warning. This broadcast contains subject matter that might trigger liberal snowflakes. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer.
Like, I'm not even a liberal snowflake, but that triggers me. All right, we were just showing up on screen for those listening on the radio of a man at a public fountain, literally washing his butt and then drinking water out of the same hand. I mean, that's a major cultural defect. And this guy even looks like he might be a cook at a restaurant. He's got one of those white shirts on. He could be a cook. I mean, that's what's going on. That's why you have to have a process when you're bringing, you can't just have unfettered migration. You can't bring people from areas where they don't have public toilets or even sewer systems and then dump them in Europe and go, hey, get along with everybody. Oh, don't leer at those women, you know, because women walk around in beekeeper suits in your country. All right, Dan, I'm going to give you a quick final say before we let you go, and we got to get Roger Stone on. Then I want to get a final statement from Josh Friedman as well. Go ahead, Dan Lyman.
Sure. Definitely an interesting experience. For me, the first couple of days were a little quieter than they were for some other folks. I know we all had different experiences, but we kind of coalesced on the third and fourth day, and there was definitely a lot more action. Found it very interesting. I was stunned at the police presence. It was massive. And also the fact that they prove that border walls work, border security works. They definitely enjoy their walls. They were hiding behind massive walls and a lot of protection. And I'd be interested to see where Bilderberg is next year, because it was such coincidental timing, it seems like, with the way the election has gone in Italy this year and where things are headed. And we'll just be keeping our eyes peeled for how things roll out from this meeting forward.
All right. That was Dan Lyman from Europe.Infowars.com and Citizen Analyst. You can find him on Twitter at Citizen Analyst. And a great new addition to the team. Thank you for going out there and suffering with the rest of the rabble while, you know, we had to watch the elites. Now let's go to Josh Friedman. Josh, I got one question for you. I was getting hit from my contacts in Germany who were saying that it looks like this was a changing of the guard for Germany, that they're going to get rid of Merkel and put someone else in, and that this was a meeting to determine that. Did you get any hearing of that? Do you have any other intel on that?
It's hard to tell. I don't have such a good grasp of whether that's in play. I've talked to Germans and I've got split reaction. I've heard from some Germans saying, no way, this Bilderberg attendee is definitely not going to be the next chancellor, but we don't know. And one of the questions that I leave with this Bilderberg 2018 conference, as the case that many of them, is there any kingmaking going on? The Bilderberg group has a reputation of being a body of kingmakers. Lots of presidents and also prime ministers, Merkel, other chancellors possibly have gone to Bilderberg before rising to high office. And there were a couple names. For instance, the governor of Colorado was there, and some people are suspecting that he's going to be the challenger to Trump. There are other names in particular that really stood out on this year's participants list. And my comment on that is it was really unfortunate this year how little interaction there was between the participants and the journalists. It wasn't just that they had it locked down. It really seemed like the participants were flat out instructed to just completely shut up and not talk to anyone. That might have been the case. It might not have been the case. And then with some of them, for instance, the one that caught the most people's attention based on the name on the list was the cardinal, who's the Secretary of State of the Vatican, Pietro Parolin. And not one journalist even saw him, as far as I know, and there weren't many of us. Not one photographed him, interacted with him, or even saw him. And there were suspicions that he might have landed on a helicopter because there was a helicopter pad on the roof. So it was a little frustrating how there are very unique names on the participants list this year, and there was just such little interaction between the press and the Bilderberg attendees.
Well, and that's the case every year, but there's always interactions between the independent journalist and the police. That is one thing to be sure. Thanks for joining us, Josh Friedman. FreemanPost.com at Freeman Reporter. Thank you for your service. We appreciate it. And we'll be right back after this with Roger Stone. I'm sure he's got some big breaking news. I haven't talked to him yet, but he was texting Michael Zimmerman this morning. So I'm sure he's got some stuff to say. We'll be right back. Welcome to the War Room. I'm your host, Rob Dew. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us. We're now into our second hour. I'm trying to clear out last hour's articles so I can pull up the new articles, because my arms are only so long. I do have this interesting vaccine story that I'm going to get to. They're offering $3,500 for human test subjects. Will you do it? How much money? You know, I did one of those stupid drug studies in college. I did a couple of them, actually, for blood pressure medication. And let me tell you, they pay good. But is it worth it? Are there going to be any adverse effects? Or was I just taking a placebo and nothing will ever happen? Who knows? One thing is for sure, though, we do have on the line Roger Stone, author of the recent Stone's Rules, also Clinton's War on Women. Roger, did you get to watch the Bill Clinton protest that we had here in Austin, Texas, and then the Patriots that confronted him at his book signing?
Yes, and I commend all those activists who are out there because, as you know, the mainstream media has tried repeatedly to couch this issue as being about infidelity or indiscretion, when in fact it's about something far more serious, violence against women and rape. Monica Lewinsky, sadly enough, is collateral damage, but she was in a consensual relationship with an older man who took advantage of her. It's the Juanita Broderick's, the Kathleen Willey's, the Paula Jones, and many, many others enumerated in my book, The Clinton's War on Women, who are owed an apology at a minimum by Bill Clinton.
Yeah, I agree. At the very minimum, we asked for an apology. There were people at this event that were bringing up all kinds of things, including Danny Williams was brought up. Also, Mena, Arkansas, and Barry Seal, what his involvement with was there, you know, because that, when that was going on, he was governor of Arkansas at the time. And there's actually a scene in the Tom Cruise movie about Barry Seal where he's been arrested by five different agencies. They bring him to the DA. She gets a call from Bill Clinton, and he goes, guys, they're going to let me go. And he's like, I'm going to give you, y'all each want a car? And they're like, is that a bribe? He's like, no, I'm just going to give you a car. She comes out and lets him go, and he's like, y'all should have taken my deal. And he walks off. But all kinds of things were brought up, his treatment of women, of course, and so on and so forth. And, of course, his one of his retorts was, people like to bring things up from a long time ago that can't be proven. I mean, how do we prove any of this? How do we get Bill Clinton back in the hot seat?
A lot of this has to do with the way the media has changed. In the 80s, frankly, Bill and Hillary and their nasty lawyers and their army of mean-spirited private detectives could bludgeon media organizations and women into silence. There was a long debate at NBC as to whether even to air the now historic Juanita Broderick interview. We only saw one part of the many hours that they interviewed her. When this brave woman tried to bring up the role of Hillary Clinton in threatening her, NBC producers jumped up and yelled, stop, we're not interested in this. So I don't think the Clintons understood that in the internet age, all those things that they were successful in covering up, the boys on the tracks, Mena, Arkansas, Bill's epic record of sexual violence, Danny Williams and his abandonment, and scandals, the blood scandals in the state hospital system where Clinton and his cronies were selling tainted blood. They dodged all these bullets when the media was more narrow and more controllable, and they should have ridden off into the sunset. In 2018, 2016, certainly, that's no longer possible because of a vibrant, robust, alternative media.
Yeah, and it does take everybody getting involved. It takes people getting off their couch, takes people putting down their cell phones, getting out and interacting with each other. We met an interesting individual who's just a libertarian in college, and he's getting all kind of pushback and all kind of brainwashing from his professors and students just because he likes, you know, free will and free thought, which are, you know, now these things are horrible. Everybody has to get in the same line, wear the same clothes, the same tight jeans, and profess their love for the Democrats. Roger, what else do you have in store for us today? What else is going on in your universe?
Well, I wanted to talk about this late Friday hit by Congressman Adam Schiff. I must say, Rob, in the 40 years in American politics, I've never seen a greater con man, a greater bunko artist, a greater demagogue than Adam Schiff. Those who think he's a liberal Democrat should look again. He is a wholly owned subsidiary of the defense industry, a giant advocate of the expansion of the wars in Afghanistan, in Iran, in Syria. He gets an enormous amount of funding from his defense contractor buddies. He has close relationships with certain elements in Ukraine that are somewhat unsavory. Now, he suggested last week that that Eric Prince, Donald Trump Jr., and yours truly should be charged with perjury because events, as he put it, since our testimony shows that we were less than truthful. This is a lie. If he refers to the direct message Twitter exchange between the flack at WikiLeaks and me, it not only proves that there is no collaboration, but it was turned over to his committee back in September. If he refers to the Wall Street Journal's emails in a very thinly reported story by Shelby Holliday, they once again prove that I had no direct dealing with WikiLeaks and that I received nothing from them, and I used the so-called intermediary. Those documents, Mr. Schiff said, should have been turned over to the committee, which is incorrect because they were outside the scope of the very precisely worded document request signed by Mr. Schiff. So he should get his facts straight. Having come up with no evidence of Russian collusion, but having gone on the record to say that he, Schiff, has seen significant evidence of Russian collusion to assist Donald Trump, I say put up or shut up. All he does is whine that he wasn't allowed to dig some more, having dug to the tune of millions for 2 years and come up empty-handed. Now, I probably will, assuming that I am going to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee, have ample opportunity to clarify all of these matters once again.
Well, and that's if they let you talk, if they don't put a gag order on you or whatnot, because I don't think they're going to televise these hearings because it's not going to make them look good. They only want to televise the hearings that make them look good. We've got the IG report coming out on Thursday, where we're going to be doing a 34-hour broadcast to, I guess, live time, analyze it, and bring different reports. And I want to get into that with you. But also this article, when we get back, of course, that's going to start at 8 a.m. Central on the 14th. But here's an article. Ex-Secret Service agent warned Parkland School of flaws in security months before massacre. So I want to get into that with you. And Roger, I don't even know. Did you have any guests online today?
We are waiting on Michael Caputo, who was going to join us, because, like me, you may recall, after he testified for the House Intelligence Committee, where they don't allow you to see or have a copy of the transcript, he was accused of perjury by Congresswoman Jackie Speier, just as Congressman Schiff falsely accuses me of perjury. So I thought he would bring some perspective to that. And then, because it is the anniversary of Robert F. Kennedy's assassination, St. John Hunt will join us shortly with some thoughts about that assassination and the one of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. You're on the War Room, and we've got a lot in store for you.
All right. We will be right back after this short break. We'll get the answers to these. And maybe we'll talk about what happened at the G20, the wool that Canada tried to pull over our eyes. And Trump said, "Nah, the gig is up. The gig is up." And tell that to your fake friends at CNN. It was one of the highlights of the G7. We'll be right back right after this. You're watching The War Room, Infowars.com/show.
Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back to the War Room. I'm your host, Rob Due. Joining me also is my co-host, Roger Stone, who'll be with us for the rest of the hour. I've got a litany of topics I want to discuss with him. We also have a couple guests coming up. Roger, let's get into the Parkland shooting. This article is out of the Daily Mail. Ex-Secret Service agent warned Parkland School of flaws in security months before massacre. Now, we've seen that they were giving special treatment to minorities and not punishing people who were bad because they didn't want their arrest numbers to go up. And that was probably across the board. I'm sure if anybody was doing bad, they're just like, okay, you're going to have detention, but we're not going to report anything. So these people just go out of control. But a retired Secret Service agent pointed out the security vulnerabilities. His name was Steve Wexler. He pointed out unlocked gates, unlocked doors, no identification badges for students at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And his children graduated from the school. And he had previously been asked to make security recommendations, but he said nothing happened after he did it. Roger Stone, your reaction to that?
I still think the most important thing to remember about the tragic Parkland shooting is that the shooter should not legally have been able to obtain a firearm because he had been remanded involuntarily by the state for threats of gun violence. So there is the fundamental flaw in the program. It's clear that at least one officer fails to do his duty and stands down. We're waiting for the Florida Department of Law Enforcement inquiry into the entire matter to try to figure out exactly what did happen. Why the Secret Service is visiting a public school in South Florida is curious to me. I know of no normal role for the Secret Service in these matters, making me a bit suspicious. But I'm going to wait till the governor's report is done to find out precisely where the flaws are here. One thing is true. The anti-gun lobby has very effectively used it as a bludgeon for gun control.
Yeah, they definitely have. Now there's a bus tour riding around with the Parkland students trying to do anything they can to grab our guns and get rid of our Second Amendment. Let's jump to the G7. That happened over the weekend. There was that viral picture of Trump standing there with his arms crossed. I do have an article on that. It's it was on his body language. I don't see that in front
this
of me.
Is, so. This is really shows you the showman in Donald Trump and his complete understanding of the medium and appearances. Here's a guy who's crossing his arms and saying, no more of your BS. No, you're not stealing our money anymore. And you can see the former communist East German chancellor, trying to confront him. This guy is a giant in a field of pygmies. And you can see in some of our Japanese allies that they're ready to switch sides from their body language. Perhaps they realize that a more equitable trade agreement between both countries would be extraordinarily beneficial to both of us.
Exactly. And that's where it all lies. And I want to play this clip. This is a CNN reporter asked this question. He kind of tears into him and calls him fake and says, look, the gig is up. I think this is a very powerful clip, and it kind of summarizes what Donald Trump's been saying through the for running for president, now being president for almost 2 years now, getting his feet really wet, a year and a half. And so let's go to this clip, and then I want to get your reaction, Roger Stone.
Of issues and opportunities facing our nations, at the top of the list was the issue of trade. Very important subject, because the United States has been taken advantage of for decades and decades, and we can't do that anymore. We had extremely productive discussions on the need to have fair and reciprocal, meaning the same. People can't charge us 270% and we charge them nothing. That doesn't work anymore. I made a lot of statements having to do with clarity. We want and expect other nations to provide fair market access to American exports, and that we will take whatever steps are necessary to protect American industry and workers from unfair foreign trading practices, of which really there are many, but we're getting them straightened out slowly but surely. I think they are starting to be committed to a much more fair trade situation for the United States, because it has been treated very, very unfairly. And I don't blame other leaders for that. I blame our past leaders. There was no reason that this should have happened. No tariffs. In other words, let's say Canada, where we have tremendous tariffs.
All right, he's getting into intricacies now of the deal. But Roger, I mean, he kind of laid it out there. The trade deals aren't fair. We're not going to put up with them anymore. We didn't get to the part where he said the gig is up, but he literally says that to a CNN reporter. The gig is up. I told him that. They're smiling because they know they've been getting away with it for so long.
You know what's amazing about this, Rob, is that he could have given that speech in 1988. He has been saying this precise thing about America being ripped off, about being taken advantage of in these giant, multi-international, one-size-fits-all trade deals, which have been of great benefit to our trading partners, but not much benefit to us. This is not an issue that he has come to recently. He has. This is the election. This is one of the major issues on which he has not only been consistent for almost 40 years, but which finally got him elected. And he's right. It's because the Bushes gave China most favored nation trading status. It's because Obama and the Clintons gave away the store. Well, there's a new sheriff in town.
Yeah, and it's very refreshing to see that. It's refreshing to watch the media go in hysterics about it, just saying, oh, he slammed. How could he talk like that to Canada? And then you got Justin Trudeau trying to give an interview and his eyebrows falling off. I mean, you know, Stone, you're a man who talks about style a lot. Guys, see if y'all can pull up that video of Trudeau's eyebrow literally hanging off. And like it looked like a roach trying to crawl away, a little globalist roach. It was disgusting.
If he had a second eyebrow like that, he would have looked like Groucho Marx. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what that was all about. It's really, really strange. But
eyebrows aren't supposed to be there. I mean, they're not supposed to be there.
Well, and he is very strange. You will remember that in the Nixon White House tapes, there is a passage in which Nixon is talking to Dr. Henry Kissinger, his national security advisor. And Nixon says, and I'll clean this up because we're on the radio, boy, that Pierre Trudeau is a real a-hole. Well, Kissinger agrees with him. And in this case, it's very clear that the chestnut has not fallen very far from the tree.
Well, and there are rumors he might be the illegitimate son of Fidel Castro, too. We don't know. People are pointing it out. And who knows? Just released 1971 documents recording captures talks between Nixon and Pompous Trudeau. So there it is. Always bringing up good history. We'll be right back after this short break. Remember, go to InfoWarsStore.com. We still have some amazing deals and free shipping going on. 50% off a lot of items, and it supports everything we're doing here. So we appreciate your support. We ask for your continued support. InfoWarsStore.com. And don't forget our 34-hour broadcast this Thursday, going from 8 a.m. Thursday to 6 p.m. on Friday. InfoWars.com/show is the free stream to send out to everybody you know.
InfoWars.com/show. The left promises to launch a communist revolution. We promise to stand in their way. This is the War Room with Owen Schroyer and Roger Stone. Watch the live stream at InfoWars.com/show.
Welcome back. You're on the War Room with my co-host, Rob Dew. And joining us now is author, songwriter, troubadour, poet, historian, and son of legendary CIA operative E. Howard Hunt, St. John Hunt, who just happens to be the co-author of an extraordinary book called The Bush Crime Family. St. John Hunt joins us now.
Hi, Roger.
Joining us, Michael Caputo of the Trump campaign, who made quite a splash last week on the question of whether or not there was yet another deep state attempt to infiltrate the Trump campaign. So I'm glad to have both of the, you gentlemen for kind of a quick discussion of the role of the intelligence agencies in the current controversy regarding President Trump. But first, because of your research on the John F. Kennedy assassination and the Robert F. Kennedy assassination, say, John, I wondered if you had any reflections on whether in this recent trove of documents, we moved closer to the truth.
Well, I think undoubtedly the documents have proven thus far to unveil many new angles. But in the final analysis, they have also failed to define for all eternity, if I should say that, the exact specifics about the assassination. There's a lot of interesting things about the FBI and Lyndon Johnson and his various involvements, KKK and J. Edgar Hoover and so forth. But to answer the question about the question that everybody wants to know, the answer would have to be that these documents so far have not given us a definitive answer as to the involvement, whoever was involved in the JFK assassination. And most people now know that certainly wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald.
All right, having dispensed of the Kennedy question, this is a question for both of you because I think you're living through it. Richard Nixon in Watergate essentially went down because individuals associated with his campaign put the opposition candidate under surveillance by breaking into the Democratic National Committee headquarters in the Watergate and placing bugs, which frankly didn't actually work. Nixon's people also got caught infiltrating the campaigns of his opponents, first Senator Humphrey and then ultimately Senator George McGovern. Is this not precisely what the Obama Justice Department and the Obama FBI have done, with the caveat that they used the power and the authority of the state for their political espionage, making it a far more egregious crime and constitutional crisis? Gentlemen.
Why don't you go first, John?
Certainly, it's far more egregious. This makes Watergate look like, child's play when you compare the two. As you said, in Watergate's time, it was Nixon and a few people who were, seeking a broader range of intelligence by the things that they endeavored to do. And now you've got the complete opposite almost. You've got the entire deep state colluding with FBI and the CIA to do much more damage to what was the Constitution of this country.
I guess I've been thinking a lot more lately about the people involved in the prosecution, the people involved in the Mueller team, especially, and the record that they bring to the table from cases like Enron. What they did to Arthur Anderson there with Prosecutor Weissman did to Arthur Anderson there. What he did to four executives from Merrill Lynch and put people in jail that never should have been in jail on charges that seemed to be made up completely out of whole cloth, applying little pieces of several different statutes to create a whole new crime. And if you look at the playbook from Enron, and you look at what's going on right now, you see what they've just done to Paul Manafort by just before, coincidentally, before his bail hearing as to whether or not he would be out of his months long house arrest. They happened to bring up this very thin gruel that they're calling an attempt to suborn perjury. I don't even think that the Mueller team is going to prevail on those charges. I think that's why they keep talking about taking away his bail or just altering it. They keep dropping that into the the mix, because I think if nothing else, they'll try to just tighten up Paul's bail instead of letting him out of his house after all these months on these on this bogus investigation. Now they're going to try and tighten it up a little bit. I see this as completely in parallel to Enron. I think that authors like Sidney Powell and others have shown the way on this. And I think we're about to see another textbook Weissman gambit where innocent people spend time in jail.
And there's, of course, the question of Mr. Mueller's arresting the wrong three suspects in the anthrax deaths or the anthrax scandal. The man who was arrested dies mysteriously while in custody. There's the question of why Mr. Mueller never investigated the Sarasota-based flight school where five of the nine hijackers from 9/11 were training, despite the fact that he had reports on that. There is the question of his taking the uranium samples to Russia for inspection in the Uranium One sale that may be the largest treasonous financial transaction in American history. There is the question of his role in the Whitey Bulger question and whether innocent men then there languished in jail. So this gentleman has quite a record. These same tactics, I think, are about to be used on the president and a number of the president's supporters.
Well, I think it's obvious that what we have going here is a lengthy coup d'etat on the president of the United States by any and all necessary. Don't forget Mueller's lack of decision making concerning the Boston, the Boston bombings. For that marathon, he dropped the ball on that when he had plenty of heads up that bombers were trouble, and he ignored that. He hasn't really excelled in doing much of anything except for being a yes man, which he seems to be very good at doing.
Michael, with about a minute to go, it must have been deja vu for you last week because Adam Schiff accused me of perjury, not allowing me, of course, to have a copy of my testimony or testify in public. I remember when Congresswoman Jackie Speier accused you of perjury, another baseless charge. These people are pathetic. They can't find Russian collusion. They can't find WikiLeaks hijinks. So they want to manufacture other offenses that don't exist. It's almost laughable.
Well, I mean, in fact, it is getting comical because, as we know, the House investigation has been shut down. It's been shut down for weeks. And they just so missed the spotlight. And these folks who were on TV every day, their invitations to cable television are dropping a little bit. And, I mean, of course, they're always going to be out there because they sing simpatico with the media on both.
All right.
We'll be right
back.
Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back to the War Room. I'm Roger Stone, and I'm co-hosting with my colleague, Rob Dew. Earlier in the show, Rob made reference to the vaccination issue. And frankly, I don't think anyone else in the alternative media has done a better job of helping educate the American people and the InfoWarrior audience about the dangers of vaccinations and the need for greater research. It occurs to me that now, at the 50th anniversary of the murder of Senator Robert F. Kennedy, it would be the perfect time for President Trump to keep his pledge to appoint Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the noted conservationist and activist New York Democrat, to chair a commission, as was promised during the campaign, to look into the safety of vaccinations. We know that the secret vaccination court paid out at least $3.6 billion to individuals who were damaged by vaccinations. We also know that under Vice President Mike Pence, this information, which has been made public previously, is no longer being published. One would have to sue under the Freedom of Information Act to try to find out how much U.S. taxpayers were forced to pay out to those who have been damaged. Rob, you said you had news on this issue, and I'm keenly interested.
Well, yeah, actually, I was going to bring it up in the next hour, but since you brought it up, let's go through it now. This is off Vaxter, which is Sherry Tenpenny's website. I interviewed Sherry Tenpenny a few years ago. We've had her on the show many times. She runs a clinic in Cleveland. Here's the article. Earned $3,500 as human vaccine test subject at St. Louis Hotel. So St. Louis University research team desperate to test out a new flu vaccine that they're willing to pay people to stay in a flu-infested hotel and eventually get a flu shot. The flu virus will be shot as a nasal spray inside your nose. Okay, let me repeat that. The flu virus will be shot as a nasal spray inside of your nose. Following that, you will either get a real flu shot or a placebo. The research team will then monitor your symptoms of flu and decide how effective the flu vaccine is. There are 24-hour rooms at the Salus Center ready to host this flu-vention. So I guess that's if you get sick. Ultimately, this is vaccine testing on humans, and the researchers' goal is not to harm them too much. But this is what, when I saw this article, I immediately used my brain, my own little Wayback Machine. Roger, I've got one. I don't have to always go to the Wayback Machine. And I went back to 2008. Homeless people die in bird flu vaccine trial in Poland. Three Polish doctors and six nurses are facing criminal prosecution after a number of homeless people died following medical trials for a vaccine to fight H5N1 bird flu virus. Authorities claim that the alleged victims received 1 to 2 pounds to be tested, what they thought was a conventional flu vaccine, but it was actually an anti-bird flu drug. What do you think of that, Roger?
It's extraordinary. First of all, isn't the doctor's oath, the Hippocratic oath, to do no harm? Go back to that quote. Well, we're not going to hurt people much. Much.
Yeah, much.
This seems entirely unethical to me. But Big Pharma is making big bucks out of mandatory vaccination. They're moving aggressively, as they have in California, to make it impossible to send your children to a public school unless they've had a phalanx of dangerous vaccinations. The ties to autism are undeniable, but the medical establishment wants to continue to try to deny them. We know where the president stands on this, yet shockingly and disappointingly, he has appointed men and women to most of the health positions in his administration who are mandatory vaxxers. It is one of my great disappointments and why I'm still hopeful that he will appoint the Kennedy Commission to look into this issue.
I totally agree. And let's just look at this. This was done in Poland. As many as 350 homeless and poor people last year were used in these trials of an untried vaccine and a highly contagious virus. Okay, now let's jump to 2017. Swiss pharma firm sued over bird flu trials on homeless people. A former clinical trial subject is suing Swiss pharma giant Novartis, alleging the company was not honest with participants about what they were being tested for. And this goes back to the Poland H5N1 flu tests. So it was the Polish city of Grudziądz. They were paid 2 francs for participation. I'm sorry, I said 2 pounds. That was 2 francs. I don't know my European money denominations. But one former subject named Gregors says participants were told the vaccine was for a conventional flu virus, has launched a civil suit against the Basel-based company. But look what they're only asking for, 100,000 francs. That's literally a drop in the bucket to these people. I'm surprised this is even going to trial. I'm surprised they didn't pay these people off so this thing wouldn't go to trial. So a criminal case into the trials concluded in Poland in earlier 2017 with three doctors and six nurses charged. though Novartis was not put under investigation in connection with that case. So they go after the little guy. So here it is. This is your warning. This is like the brown shirts. Let's just put this in Nazi terms because everybody likes to label people Nazis. So Hitler had brown shirts go out to thug people up. Novartis had these doctors, which are kind of the equivalent of the brown shirts, in my opinion, that were giving people this flu vaccine, this H5N1 vaccine to test it on them. They were testing it on homeless people, barely paying them out any money. And then they had a few of them die. Then they get put under trial, and Novartis is barely getting even brought into this. So the criminal trial is just for the doctors and nurses, not even for the group who made the bird flu vaccine and was giving it to doctors to test. I mean, how can we keep going on with this in our society where over and over again, the drug companies are not held liable for the things they produce? Well, this is madness, Roger Stone.
These are the same people who are forcing opioids on us, who are bribing doctors to overprescribe them, who are handing them out like they're chiclets. And incidentally, those are the people who are opposing the effort by numerous states to legalize medicinal marijuana because it is so superior to opioids. The president's right. Opioids are the number one health crisis in the country. And the people who are pushing them are the same people who are pushing their very profitable vaccinations and using the machinery and authority of government to make them mandatory, to take away your choice. That's why the president's support for a religious exemption was an important statement to the many people who voted for him because of his skepticism about the vaccination issue.
Yeah, but there's so many stupid parents out there that don't look into this at all, that blindly just follow their doctors. I mean, these people were following their doctors, you know, that were there, and they, some of them end up dying. And it's just like, well, they say it's safe and effective. I'm just going to do it. We have to have a independent study that's not funded by the drug companies at all. They cannot be involved in this study. It has to be independent people. And I'd say get people who are against vaccination, mandatory vaccination. Get people who are for it. Get people who are for children's safety. Because for God's sakes, it's our children that we're killing and maiming out there by just upping the doses, upping the number of vaccines every year. We don't really test these things. We just say they're safe and effective, poof. And then every year, there's hundreds of millions of dollars paid out by our federal government to victims who are damaged by these very same vaccines that we're told are safe and effective by the doctors. Do you guys get it? I mean, it's freaking ridiculous. Sorry, Roger.
I couldn't agree more, which is why I think Robert Kennedy is the perfect man to head a commission. Nobody can say, oh, he's a right-wing kook. He's an extremist. He's an extreme conservative. He's a right-wing Republican. No, he's a man of impeccable integrity who I think his conclusions would be widely respected. And he has strong views. But I agree with you. Let's have a balanced commission. Let's have advocates for vaccinations on there. Let's have opponents on there. Let's have parents on there.
Yeah.
Let's get to the bottom of this.
All I'm interested in is the truth. And if they can come out and say, hey, we've done these studies, we've done this, with that, we've agreed, hey, there's some things wrong with the vaccinations and we're going to fix that. But here, we think these are safe and people should take these, but these are questionable. So these are on the questionable list. So these are optional. And then we let the chips fall where they may, but we have to do real studies. We can't just say, oh, vaccine companies say they're safe and effective. Oh, they said safe and effective. That's all that matters now. They say safe and effective. We don't have to do anything. We just have to suck our thumbs. God, Roger, thanks for joining us. You really pissed me off this last segment. Hopefully I can contain myself and come back. I got a little George Soros news, and we'll be right back. You're watching The War Room, Infowars.com/show.
Thank you. Hear what I did wrong.
The War Room, Infowars.com/show.
We're like the piggy bank that everybody's robbing, and that ends.
President Trump pulled no punches and dropped an economic suplex on the world leaders at the 44th annual G7 summit in Quebec, Canada. The U.S., Canada, the U.K., France, Italy, Japan, and Germany represent more than 60% of global net worth between them. President Trump brought a long overdue wake-up call to the proceedings.
We tackled a variety of issues and opportunities facing our nations. At the top of the list was the issue of trade. very important subject because the United States has been taken advantage of for decades and decades, and we can't do that anymore. We had extremely productive discussions on the need to have fair and reciprocal, meaning the same. People can't charge us 270%, and we charge them nothing. That doesn't work anymore. I made a lot of statements having to do with clarity. We want and expect other nations to provide fair market access to American exports, and that we will take whatever steps are necessary to protect American industry and workers from unfair foreign trading practices, of which really there are many. But we're getting them straightened out, slowly but surely. I think they are starting to be committed to a much more fair trade situation for the United States, because it has been treated very, very unfairly. And I don't blame other leaders for that. I blame our past leaders. There was no reason that this should have happened. No tariffs. In other words, let's say Canada, where we have tremendous tariffs. The United States pays tremendous tariffs on dairy, as an example, 270%. Nobody knows that. We pay nothing. We don't want to pay anything. Why should we pay? We have to, ultimately, that's what you want. You want a tariff-free, you want no barriers, and you want no subsidies, because you have some cases where countries are subsidizing industries, and that's not fair. I mean, we have India where some of the tariffs are 100%. 100%. And we charge nothing. You can't do that. And so we are talking to many countries. We're talking to all countries. And it's going to stop. And I don't blame these people, but I will blame them if they don't act smart and do what they have to do. Because they have no choice. I'll be honest with you. They have no choice. They're either going to make the trades fair, because our farmers have been hurt. You look at our farmers for 15 years, the graph is going just like this down. Our farmers have been hurt. Our workers have been hurt. Our companies have moved out and moved to Mexico and other countries, including Canada. Now, we are going to fix that situation. And if it's not fixed, we're not going to deal with these countries. But the relationship that I've had is great. So you can tell that to your fake friends at CNN. The relationship that I've had with the people, the leaders of these countries has been, I would really rate it on a scale of 0 to 10, I would rate it a 10. As an example, the European Union is brutal to the United States. They don't take, and they understand that, they know it. They, when I'm telling them, they're smiling at me. You know, it's like the gig is up. It's like the gig is up. They're not trying to, there's nothing they can say. They can't believe they got away with it. I asked a top person in China, how did it get so bad? He looked at me and said, nobody ever talked to us.
President Trump even called for the readmittance of Russia to the G7, thus making it the G8. Russia had been suspended from the group in 2014 due to the annexation of Crimea from the Ukraine. Members were against that idea.
I would rather see Russia in the G8 as opposed to the G7. I would say that the G8 is a more meaningful group than the G7.
President Trump then left the G7 for Singapore on a mission to negotiate peace with Kim Jong-un of North Korea. Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin has tasked Austria with the possibility of being the meeting place between President Trump and the Russian leader. As Chancellor Merkel's plea for a new world order sounds off the globalist panic and despair. John Bound reporting.
All right, and we'll be right back. Don't forget our 34-hour coverage of the Inspector General's report this Thursday starting at 8 a.m. Infowars.com/show. Final hour of the War Room. at 6 p.m. We will go back into rebroadcast of the of our 10 hours that we do here every day from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Soon to be more with your help. How do you help? Spread the articles. Spread the links. Talk to people. Go have barbecues. Become a human again. Put down your phone for a little while. And also check out some of the great products we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Right now we're offering free shipping and 50% off some of our most popular items, including BrainForce Plus, Survival Shield X2, two of our biggest sellers, DNA Force, Alpha Power, Silver Bullet, Super Male Vitality, The Real Red Pill, and a whole bunch more. Go to InfoWarsStore.com and check out all those amazing deals. And it supports everything we're doing. Now, we did an extra 2 hours. And it really, it was like an extra 4 hours because we did 2 hours from the studio here on Sunday. And we also did 2 hours plus in the field out at a Bill Clinton Me Too protest. Well, this Thursday, we're going to do 34 hours. We start at 8 a.m. on Thursday. We go all the way through till the next day and then finish up our 10-hour schedule. So we do our normal 10-hour schedule twice on Thursday and Friday. That's 20. And then we do an extra 14 hours overnight. Lots of guests, lots of surprises. We're going to be going over this IG report, which when we get back from this video, I'm going to go over how the Democrats are going to spin the Comey IG report. This is a Zero Hedge article. But right now, let's go to Savannah Hernandez, who went out on the street. We released this over the weekend, trying to find out who the leader of the Democratic Party is right now. Who could it be? And nobody knows. Here's that report.
This is Savannah Hernandez for InfoWars.com, and we're out here on South Congress Street for First Thursday to ask people who they think the current or maybe even future leader of the Democratic Party might be.
I actually am not sure, to be honest with you. I know that.
I don't know.
I know that Sanders said that he might be running again, but I have heard a lot about Beto. I don't know. I'm not really
sure.
You
mean like overall party? Or like.
Yeah, like who do you think is leading the Democratic Party right now?
I feel like that's more of a loaded question. It's a little complicated. I can't say for sure. I'm not versed in it well enough.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have no idea.
Like nobody. It used to be Hillary Clinton. I don't see anybody like making a, it's going to be a nobody. The last three couple elections have been people who have never expected. Nobody expected Donald Trump. Donald Trump first said he was going to do something with presidency against Obama. We thought it was a joke, and now he's the president. So I guess that's how the presidencies are going now.
Who do you think the future leader of the Democratic Party will be?
Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm just saying.
Bernie?
Bernie?
Bernie right. About to die in a couple years, dude. He like 90.
They all look up in age, but Bernie is probably the more logical choice.
We don't hire any presidents that we think are going to die. I can tell you that right now.
That's going to be, what kind of leader? Like,
I mean, who do you think is...
Or senator.
Just like overall, who do you think is leading the party?
Gosh. Let's go with Bernie Sanders. That's a guess.
I have no idea. Hillary Clinton. I don't know.
I can't say that I know.
Oh, I have no idea.
No idea? Gosh. I really can't tell. I know. I'm actually from Washington, D.C., and I should, you know, it's right in my backyard, but goodness, I don't know. I know things are heating up right now, and we are trying to figure out what's going to happen in 2020. Nancy Pelosi.
That's a tough question. You could go a lot of directions with this, but I'm going to say Tom Perez.
Ooh, right now? I would say by popularity, I would say either Lizzie Warren or Bernie Sanders.
All right.
But I don't know the actual facts at all.
Beto.
Yeah.
Tina.
Yeah. That question's yours.
Hillary Clinton.
All right, perfect. Thanks, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm not sure.
The leader?
New question. Do y'all know who Alex Jones is?
Yes, I do. My friend told me about this crazy guy the other day. Yeah.
Yeah, I do know who he is.
What do you think of him?
Are you guys on InfoWars, are you?
We're just out here with Action 7 News. We're just asking people questions.
Okay, yeah. I've heard of that guy. I watched, like, one of his segments, and he's pretty wild. He's pretty crazy, but I appreciate the, him exercising his freedom of speech.
I know Alex Trebek more than Alex Jones, and that's a problem.
Do you know who Alex Jones is?
Is he a boxer?
He's the future of the Democratic Party.
All right, y'all. It has definitely been a memorable first Thursday out here on South Congress for me. This has been Savannah Hernandez for InfoWars.com, and thank you for everyone out here who answered our question.
You know, I always think you get the best responses from people when they are drinking, the most truthful responses. In fact, I did a pretty crazy, we were in Wisconsin, in Appleton, Wisconsin, interviewing drunk people on this strip that was just filled with bars. I'm like, come on, guys, let's go out. And we got some amazing, amazing responses. But let's go to this. Here's how the Democrats, people who are Democrats can't even name who their leader is going to be. But here's how they're going to spin the IG report. That's Michael Horowitz is going to put this report out. Now, originally, this was requested by the Democrats because they wanted to look into Comey's decision to reopen the Clinton email probe, which they say cost Clinton the elections. So they said, you got to do a report. So he's been going over this stuff for a year, you know, over a year. And we know some of it's been leaked, of course, the subordinate comment that Comey was subordinate or insubordinate to Loretta Lynch. And then he's going to testify on June 18th. So this is going to be great. We're going to have June 14th, the report gets released. Then we're going to have a weekend to look at it. And then he comes out on the 18th. So we'll be able to look and see if he's doing any backtracking or anything like that. He's supposed to be impartial. So we'll see. So, of course, Trump has been using this to kind of say, you know, this proves my point that I've fired Comey with justification. And he started calling him what, Slippery James Comey. And it also brings back the old Clinton email server, which we never got to see, or the DNC server. Things the FBI never got to look at. So that'll be interesting. And of course the Dems are going to say that Comey, broke his longstanding bureau protocol not to insert himself into politics by getting into this election. And, Robbie Mook, of course, all the Democrats have thrown Comey over the side. They say his credibility's gone. But before they loved him, but then when he came out after Clinton, they hated him. Then when he got fired by Trump, they loved him again. And now they hate him again. So it's likely, this is a Zero Hedge article, this is the end. It's likely the Democrats will search the IG report for justification that Comey's handling of the email investigation was clumsy. But they also probably argue that Trump really fired Comey because of the agency's Russia probe and Comey's refusal to publicly say the president himself wasn't under investigation. Now, how is Comey going to respond? Well, what's interesting is that he's already lied. He's been caught in a lie about his FBI agents when he said, we were looking at the president in June of, I believe it was 2016. But then we have texts going back to 2015 of December where Peter Stroke was asking for his Oconus lures, which is basically spies that they were putting into the campaign. And did he get the go ahead to put those in to the Trump campaign? So he lied about that. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. One thing's for sure, we're going to be here with our 34 hours of coverage, June 14th, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Friday, June 15th. We're going to be looking at that report. I will be actually kicking it off because David Knight is on vacation. So I will be pulling early morning duty on the War Room, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., right before the Alex Jones Show. Now, I do want to give out the phone number because I am going to take some calls later in the show. 888-201-2244, 888-201-2244. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about McDonald's new toilet rule that is causing people to wet themselves. And no, it's not because it's what the new Big Mac is or what's in it. But we'll be right back with that. You're watching The War Room, InfoWars.com/show, 888-201-2244. Call in.
The War Room, InfoWars.com/show.
All right, I gave out that number earlier, 888-201-2244. You are watching The War Room. I'm your host, Rob Dew. You can follow me on Twitter at Dews News, D-E-W-S-N-E-W-Z. Got Jim in Maryland, Jerome in New York, Peggy in Northern Cali. And I want to talk to all of you. I want to bring up this story real quick. This is in Australia. McDonald's customers can claim ridiculous new toilet rule is causing them to wet themselves. So customers at a McDonald's restaurant in Australia have taken to social media to complain about the strict bathroom policies that they've caused accidents. So basically what McDonald's is doing is saying, look, we're sick and tired of people coming in and using our toilets. The exact opposite of what Starbucks is doing. And when I say people, they mean non-paying customers. So, which I guess are just people off the streets. They're not customers. So they're coming in, using the toilets and leaving. In fact, I think when I was a kid, we used to travel around. We used to always pull into the McDonald's because they had the cleanest bathrooms. Now, that was in the late 80s, early 90s. I don't know what it's like now. I don't go into McDonald's. Now I go into a Buc-ee's because they do have the cleanest toilets around. And anybody who drives around Texas knows about Buc-ee's. It's like the Walmart of gas stations. Anyway, in order to use the restaurant in Queensland, they have to first place an order and then use the code at the bottom of their receipt to get access to the toilets, a system put in place in multiple McDonald's restaurants in the UK. Toilets proudly provided for the use of McDonald's customers, say the sign, code at the bottom of receipt. Well, Joanne complained, and she had her 5-year-old daughter that she didn't have the receipt with her, and she took her to use the bathroom, and she couldn't get in, and boom, girl had an accident on the floor. Then someone's grandma took 5 minutes to walk from the car park to the toilets, only to find out she had to walk back and order first. But this is, and I think, kind of a reaction to places like Starbucks saying, hey, anybody can come in and use our toilet, which then makes other people think, oh, I can go in and use any toilet anywhere without being a customer. So that is going on. Then we have this article. Twitter CEO caves to liberal backlash, say he was wrong to eat Chick-fil-A. Now eating Chick-fil-A makes you a racist bigot. Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey on Sunday expressed regret over eating a Chick-fil-A because of the company's policy on gay marriage. Dorsey tweeted a screenshot from his phone that showed the purchase he had made using a mobile application. And after liberal backlash, I wonder how much Chick-fil-A paid him to do that. Dorsey apologized for eating at the popular fast food restaurant. At issue was Chick-fil-A CEO Dan Cathy's 2012 support for defining marriage between a man and a woman, as he described as the biblical definition of family. And they have, of course, he was charged. They show his charge, his 10% that he got applied, because he got a boost. This is probably some new program Twitter is going to roll out that you can get discounts at certain places, but I bet they'll drop Chick-fil-A after this. And Adam Goldman says, on behalf of the whole LGBTQ community, I don't know, he forgot about the IPPTTTC, whatever else they want to say. Would you kindly boost your head out of your ass? Please delete this or follow up with how much free advertising you're going to give GLAD. That's what Erica Joyce said. And this is an interesting company to boost during Pride Month. How dare he, during Pride Month, eat at Chick-fil-A? And he's, you're right, completely forgot about their background, completely forgot. I love it how the left eats their own. So, Jack, you now have to repent. You have to fall down at the altar of political correctness. And you are not allowed to eat at Chick-fil-A during Pride Month. Let's go to, we got Jerome in New York. He wants to either know or he's going to tell us who the leader of the Democratic Party is. Go ahead, Jerome.
Hello, Rob. How are you? Good?
I'm good.
Hey, Rob, I can tell you real easy who's going to be the leader of the Democratic Party is Mitt Romney.
Well, yeah. He did write Obamacare.
Well, yeah, he's going to be the leader. He's already digging his heels in to run the establishment wing. When he gets installed in there in that election that's coming up, yeah. And let me tell you a little something else. You know what? You guys are working yourselves to an early grave and trying to get this thing straightened out. Let me tell you a little something. As soon as President Trump's gone, when his term's over, it's going to go back just like it was, if not worse.
Well, that's a great outlook.
Yeah.
If you're a pessimist.
Terrible. I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to require a revolution. It's not going to happen like you guys want it to happen. It's not just going to go that way. I'm just telling you from an old man. I'm an old man. I can see it. It's too interwoven. You're not going to be able to unravel it. It's like a terrible backlash on like on those rotten reels. Mm-hmm. You sit there and try to unweave it, and as soon as you try to think you're going to have it unwoven, bam, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, well, but anyway, it'll be interesting to see. Hey, we're all going to be there to see it. If they don't get us, if the brown shirts don't get us.
Well,
because they do want to put together a class war. They're trying to get the classes to fight with each other and different ideologies to fight with each other. That's what the system wants. They want people fighting. They don't want people getting along. But when there's a roaring economy and there's money to be made, I think you might see people's attitudes change.
That's the only thing that you're going to have to be able to keep it going is having the economy keep going. But that's where the Federal Reserve has stepped in and raised interest rates, where it's going to be, they want to keep you at just a certain level. They're not going to let you get, as soon as you try to inch a little ahead, bam, you're going to pull a rug right out from under your feet. That's just the way the system's set up.
Oh, I agree. Anyway, I agree. Yeah, we have to go after the Federal Reserve. He's got to.
That's still a big mess there. I don't know why they don't take care of it. They can, but they don't want to. Congress, they don't want to do their job. That's just flat what it is. There's a few in there that wants to work, and most of them don't. They just want to collect a paycheck.
We know what happens when people investigate the Federal Reserve. They end up driving down Dallas with half of their head. And that's what happened to the last president that talked about the Federal Reserve and investigating him. So we'll see what happens. Thank you for your dose of pessimism, Jerome. Appreciate it. Now you've kind of bummed me out. I think we can win this. I think we can turn it around. I think humanity's got a chance. And I think there's a lot of good people. I think there's a lot of misguided people that don't really get the full story. I ran into a guy last night I've known for years. He believes in the Russian collusion theory. I'm going to have to just go by his house and talk to him for a second. You know, that's what you have to do. Because tweeting him something or texting him, nobody's going to read anything. They have to hear it from a person. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take the people who are awake to wake people up. That's how it's going to work. That's how it's going to change, one by one. And we could turn it around. We're seeing things turn around. Europe's finally waking up. They're seeing the destruction that the European Union has caused. They're seeing that you can have a life that where you're not subjected to rule of unelected bureaucrats, and they're starting to change their mind. All right, we're going to go to a break, and when we get back, I got Jim in Maryland, Peggy in Northern California. I'm going to look at Tanzania and unrestricted bloggers. They're coming after them. And what does that mean to us? You have your blogging license, sir? Do you have your card? Well, how do you get your card? Well, you get your card for the government. That means the government can take it away. So we're going to talk about that. When we get back, you're watching The War Room on Infowars.com/show. Send out that free link to everybody you know.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
Talk radio, great again. It's The War Room
with Owen Schroyer.
Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back to The War Room. This is some interesting independent journalism news, because things like this are going to start creeping their way down. You know how Twitter has their verified, unverified thing, and they use that check mark as a little status symbol? I've never asked for a check mark. I don't want a check mark. I don't need their Jewish star or their scarlet letter tattooed to my forehead to let people know I'm a real person. You can just interact with me. And I interact with a lot of people on Twitter, probably more than I should. Here's an article. Tanzania orders all unregistered bloggers to take down their sites. Now, Tanzania is one of the only places you can get the jewel Tanzanite, which I used to sell. and that's another story for another time. They ordered all unregistered bloggers and online forums on Monday to suspend their websites or face criminal prosecution as critics accuse the government of tightening control of the internet. Oh, wait, wait, wait. You're going to accuse us of tightening control of the internet? Where's your license, people? Boom. And just like the snap of a Thanos finger, people have to tear down their sites. So there was an online discussion forum called Jammy Forums that people like that was shut down. And the state-run Tanzania Communications Regulation Authority, or the TCRA, warned it could take legal action against all unlicensed websites. Regulations were passed in March, made it compulsory for bloggers and owners of other online forums, such as YouTube channels, to register with the government and pay up to $900 for a license. $900. Guess what the per capita income of Tanzania is? Oh, just slightly below that per year. So what does this allow? This allows only certain individuals who can afford it to then have a voice. And if they can pay for that, they probably are toeing the government line. So it's just a way to crack down dissent. And this is going to come all over the world. It's going to happen all over the world. That's why they make journalists have their press site pass. Do you have your press pass? You got your press pass? We used to say the First Amendment is our press pass. And then they would say, well, you can't come in. So then we had to get press passes. I mean, ridiculous stuff they're going to do over and over again because they don't want people talking. They don't want anything unregulated. They want a systematic, singular party line. Doesn't matter what country you're in. They want it coming down the pipe. Let's go to Peggy in Northern California. Cali is changing. There is a movement. What's going on in Northern California, Peggy?
Hey, Rob. It is a red wave out here in Northern California. I just want to say that right now.
You still there? Go ahead.
Yeah, I am. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's a red wave out here. I mean, I'm in Santa Rosa, which is right outside the Bay Area, and we are in red heaven here. We support Trump. We support the movement. Many of us are independent business owners and women, and we love men, by the way. Love them. We're not all Harry Pitt, feminists. So let's do away with that whole stereotype and get into the real facts of what is really happening out here in Northern California. It is wild and it is wonderful.
So tell us, are people running for office? Are people getting elected? What's going on?
The people that are running for office are not getting elected because they cannot get elected with the current system as it is in place. So we have a lot of grassroots efforts going on here. We're putting forth, libertarians. We're putting forth independents. Anybody that is outside of the, the duopoly that we have going on, which is really, a one world order, we support after we vet them and everything else. But the main thing that I wanted to say is California is not all elitist, coastal, Democratic-run airheads.
Oh, I know. We've shown maps, and it looks like the rest of the country. Most of it's red, and there's little pockets of blue, which we saw in the last presidential election. It's just the major cities, the gun-free zones where everybody's getting killed, the Democratic strongholds, is where you still have the brainwashing going on.
Right. And, the mayor there in Oakland that put out this, come in if you're, a gang member or whatever. We had people go down. We wore InfoWars shirts, and we had a little mini protest. It wasn't covered. Nobody had their cell phones out. We didn't televise it or anything. But you know what? We got a lot of support behind the scenes. People are angry about this. They don't want their, inner cities, major cities, and even people in San Francisco are quite pissed about what's going on in the city, as we call it here in Santa Rosa. I mean, this is not cool with us. And there are more and more people that are awakened to what is happening in our state, especially here in Northern California. We used to be the trendsetters of good things, and now, we're being run over by a few people with a lot of bucks, and we've pretty much had it.
Yeah, they were just showing a map of Hillary Clinton's election, which was obviously a lot different. But here's the 2018 California election results. It's changed drastically from when Hillary Clinton was elected. Of course, the Senate map is totally blue. They're going to vote blue. Of course, probably Feinstein's going to win. They love fossils, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Feinstein thing is ridiculous. I mean, if you talk to people on the street, they don't vote for her. Pelosi is out. I mean, so where are they getting the vote? We don't know. And I want to say that we need to vote your heart here for the next election coming up. You've got to vote. You've got to get out there, and you've got to do everything you can to turn our state like the majority of it is, which is realistic.
Well, I'd say, Peggy, the only thing you can do better is when you go out to these protests, somebody's got to film them. Somebody's got to post this stuff. Somebody's got to put it up, because we need to know. We need to see the voices in the wilderness, especially in California, because people think it's just, oh, it's a blue state. Nothing can change it. It'll never change. And with that attitude, it keeps perpetuating itself. So we need people to show that, hey, we have people who are interested in common sense. We have people who aren't going to say, let's open up and pay for health care of illegal immigrants who come across.
No,
you know, you have to pay your own way. If you want to come to this country, you have to bring something. You have to come with a skill, not suck off the system.
Absolutely. And as a small business owner, I mean, I think that's where we fall short, because we are still afraid to come out there, you know, and get in and hold our phones up and we're behind the scenes. So we, you know, encourage other people that won't affect our, you know, bottom line, to go out there and do this, but we are still afraid to get out there ourselves. And I think that is where we need to start turning the tide. We need to show our faces and actually, you know, put our name to it. So I'm Peggy. I'm in Northern California, Santa Rosa. I own a business, and most of you have shopped there. So I'm just putting it out there. We all have to stand up. It is time. It is beyond time. This has got to stop.
All right, Peggy, appreciate the call. Appreciate your outlook. It's quite a contrast from our earlier caller from New York, who was just like, well, it's done. There's no way we could do this after Trump. And I think that's wrong. I think we have people in this country who, now that have seen that it's possible for somebody to get elected that isn't part of the political establishment, political royalty, political dynasty, get elected to president. Because that's all we've had, I think, you know, since Jimmy Carter and, you know, even Ronald Reagan, you could say he was sort of an establishment guy being a governor first, but he started off as an actor. But since then, and I wouldn't even consider Ronald Reagan much of a presidency, because he was shot within a year, and then it kind of became the George Bush presidency. So George Bush really got 2.5 terms, if you ask me. All right, when we get back, I'm going to take at least one more call, and then I want to get into this Veganism is a Global Cult by Millie Weaver. We'll be right back after this. You're watching The War Room. Infowars.com/show is the free stream to send out to everybody you know.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
Jones here reporting from Hawaii. We're off the island of Maui, and Democrat Congressman Hank Johnson believes that islands float. We're about to see if his theory is correct. He also believes socialism works better than capitalism, which is similar to believing that islands float. But let's see if he's correct, because after all, if you don't agree with him, you're racist.
This is a island that at its widest level is, what, 12 miles from shore to shore? Yeah, my fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
We don't anticipate that.
Hey, look, it's floating. No, what? Islands don't float?
Look, it's total proof. The island is the top of a mountain, and it just keeps going down 3,000 feet off the coast of Hawaii. The scientists are right.
The Democrat Hank Johnson is wrong. Total proof, look.
Wait a minute.
Now, those are boats. Those do float. The Pride of Maui is aluminum, and it floats on top of water. Rocks do not float on top of water.
I would sign off as Alex Jones with InfoWars.com, but now I identify as Hank Johnson, a black man from Atlanta. So, Hank Johnson for InfoWars.com, signing off. Over and out.
All right, and that was Hank Johnson, a.k.a. Alex Jones. Do islands float, Hank? Come on, really? He's worried about islands capsizing? Oh, my goodness. Somebody give Hank Johnson a clue. Now, I want to go to this Millie Weaver report about veganism, because it kind of goes into the whole Jack Dorsey thing where, you know, these people are being shamed. He was attacked by a cult. And there you can. There's the link to the whole video. Veganism transforms into globalist cult. And that's a report. You can go check that out. Put that up over the weekend. But here's another cult. And it's unlimited spending when it comes to the Department of Defense. And I'm not talking about the soldiers, the guys serving on the front line. I'm talking about the administrative bigwigs in the background. You know, back in 2017, MSU found $21 trillion missing between the years 1998 to 2015. And then in 2001, we had Donald Rumsfeld say they couldn't find $2 trillion in Pentagon funds. And that was September 10th, 2001. Interestingly enough, what happened the next day? So people are estimating up to $29 trillion missing in the Pentagon. So Trump, what did he do? He said, we're going to start auditing the DOD. We're going to start finding out where this money's going. And so people are pissing and moaning, saying, oh, it's going to cost about $1 billion to find this. Well, I got news for you. $29 trillion is $1,000 billion. I mean, $1 trillion is $1,000 billion. So $29 trillion is 1,000 times more than what it's going to cost to find out how much money is missing out of the Pentagon. And what is this going to do? Well, it's going to put in better practices. It's going to put in more regulations. It's going to put in oversight. And at the end, yeah, it's going to cost a little bit of money, but we're going to save money in the long run. And that is what Donald Trump has been doing. He also wants to get better trade deals for our country that I know the liberals hate. They think we should bow down to Mexico and bow down to Canada. So let's go to this. We're going to end the show with this. Veganism is a global cult. This is Millie Weaver. I'm signing off for today. I'll see you tomorrow. Infowars.com/show is the free stream to send out to everybody you know, and you're watching The War Room. Take it away, Millie.
Essentially, the vegan ideology can be used as a vehicle to usher in globalism and globalist policies. Now, as innocent as veganism may seem, if you actually scratch the surface, the more you'll find when you start questioning vegans and their lifestyle, it's a lot bigger than just a diet. It's actually an ideology, and to some degree, it's a cult. Most vegans that I've talked to actually acknowledge the fact that they could not live and sustain a vegan diet if it weren't for global trade and the fact that they have access to fruits and vegetables that are produced on other continents. Your whole argument that we can live on veganism is based on this new idea that we can have globalized agricultural systems, and it's really a huge feat and a big project.
You're absolutely right, and I'm not being improper because I agree with you, right, on that point. So, and the issues that you raise, again, it comes back to this idea of it's going to be a gradual shift to veganism. And look, there's going to be bumps in the road. I'm not saying it's going to be a smooth transition and going vegan is going to answer all the world's problems. I'm going to admit that to you.
If we didn't have globalization and global trade, you could not actually sustain yourself off of a vegan diet if you only had the local produce that was seasonal available to you in this northern region.
I couldn't tell you what seasonal fruit and veg and if I could do it all year round, but I don't have to worry about that because we can sustainably live by getting food from different parts of the country and from different states. So we can get avocados from California and take them to Cleveland, and that's fine, and we can do that sustainably as well.
So basically you admit that the entire premise of veganism is based on having globalization.
Globalism,
essentially.
I mean, I know what InfoWars are like, and the topic of globalization is a scary word for you guys, and I appreciate that, but the issue of veganism is something that we would like to spread across the world just because it's a more compassionate and ethical way to live.
A vegan talking point is that less farmland will be used if we actually cut off all meat production and we switch 100% to vegetable grain crops.
All the grain that's used in this country alone could feed 800 million humans, which means we could eradicate world hunger. Congo, just the grain that's fed to animals in this country alone.
Well, here's how that's actually not necessarily the case. A global population census estimated that in order for the entire global population to switch to an all-vegan diet, they would essentially have to adapt a one-child policy. And with our current global population, you'd have to essentially take all of the arable land, all of the good farmable land, and turn it into agricultural land for the production of crops and vegetables. The vast majority of that good arable farmland actually is inside the United States, and a good portion of it is in the Midwestern and Eastern area of the United States. Now, if you look in the Eastern area of the United States, you actually have a lot of development, commercial development, and homes everywhere. So you would essentially have to destroy the rights of the American people and use eminent domain to seize all of their land in order to work out a global vegan diet-based society. We would have to have Agenda 21 enacted, where everyone's forced into little cities in sky-rise buildings in order to survive in this new type society, where we would have forced resource-based controlled societies that would all be living off of a vegan diet.
It's the single biggest thing that, or the single smallest thing we could do that has the biggest impact, is going vegan. And all these other issues we do have to address, single-use plastic, greenhouse gas emissions from other sources, absolutely, crude oil use. But it's such a pivotal and significant thing that we can do that will have such a huge impact.
So do you think that we should pass laws to shut down slaughterhouses and ban meat?
Absolutely. We believe that animals have the same right to freedom and to live a happy life as anybody else does. We believe that species is an irrelevant, characteristic for who deserves rights.
Are you talking about banning meat in America or globally?
It's not about us banning something, because we realize it's probably very impossible to ban something. But if we encourage people to stop their consumption, then naturally the amount that's raised and produced will be dropped until it's no longer relevant in society.
If this vegan activist, Earthling Ed, is saying that he's actually not advocating for the banning of all meat, why are they protesting outside of a small meat farm? You guys say you want to shut down farms like this that have cattle and pigs and chickens.
And what we do, we use our profits to support the Lord's work and to make a living and to take care of our health. We're very picky about what we use. Our beef and our hogs, we harvest them here. This started as a hobby with one, and you see how it ended up.
What happens to those animals? You do realize that those animals have been bred in a certain way to be used for us domestically.
Right. As the world shifts to veganism, it will be a gradual shift, which means that the number of animals that we breed will obviously reduce accordingly as the number of vegans rises, because farmers aren't going to breed animals they know they can't sell.
So the animals will just disappear.
Right. Well, so the animals that we breed, the ones that, as you rightfully admitted yourself, aren't natural animals who can't survive without our help, will disappear. But what that will allow is for this farmland that we have now to repopulate, for those natural ecosystems to replenish, which allow natural wildlife to restock in those natural areas.
Do we really want to risk letting our domesticated animals become extinct because we just let them go based on some vegan ideology, when we've taken thousands and thousands of years to breed and domesticate these animals for our use, where they can also have a benefit from us as well? Most of what I've encountered when I've talked to these vegan protesters is a bit of a forked tongue discussion. On one hand, they'll say, oh, humans are animals, therefore we have the same value as a pig or a chicken.
Pigs, for instance, are as clever, have been proven to have the same cognitive ability as a three-year-old child, so they're more intelligent than a baby up to the age of three, you know, by scientific studies. So if you're going to go by intelligence and cognitive abilities, then a pig's life should be worth more than a newborn baby's life.
Essentially calling them non-human animals, because they're implying that humans are also animals.
We're animals. I mean, even if you believe in the Bible, we're still animals.
So they push that line of thinking right there, which is moral relativism, but at the same time, they try to appeal to Christian morals and ethics to try to make the argument that it's wrong to kill, therefore we should not kill animals. Do you think-